Hello and welcome to the CSFL Hub podcast. I'm your host as always, Kyle. Today's podcast will be the kickoff podcast for this 2022 season, which is almost here. It is right upon us. But before we get into any of the good football talk, I just want to say thank you to all of you guys, the supporters who support the Hub, alumni coaches, alumni players, current of both current coaches, current players, parents, school administration, and everybody in between, people who just like good football, who like sprint football. We wouldn't be where we are without you guys. You know, financial contributions, the constant, you know, media, you know, retweets, likes, shares, all that good stuff just helps to promote the game, promote the players, promote the teams, promote the universities. And it just makes it better for all the parties involved. So, you know, I know for one, for a fact that the Hub wouldn't be here today where it is without, you know, this constant support that I've gotten. You know, this started as an idea that I had when I finished my 4 years of playing sprint football, and you know, I went to people about the idea, you know, in league administration, and you know, wasn't received the best, and you know, I kind of said fuck that, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and do this, you know, regardless if I had a support or not. And to see where it's come because of the support that was there, even though when they thought I didn't think it was going to be there. It just goes to show that you can get anything done if you put your mind to it. And as long as people are willing to support you and back you up, you know, the sky's the limit. So kind of a shoot for the stars, land on the moon type of thing. So personally, again, I just want to say thank you to all these supporters. No matter what way you may have supported or continue to support, know it is very much appreciated. Appreciate every single person who's ever given a listen, a view, a retweet, a like, anything like that. So let's keep it up. This upcoming season is going to be as good as ever. So all that being said, let's go ahead and get right into the, you know, the football talk, the nitty gritty. So obviously this year is going to be a year to remember because this will be the inaugural season of the MSFL, the Midwest Sprint Football League. So the Midwest Sprint Football League is coming into their first season. And they have six teams in this first season. So this will be the first year that there are two sprint football leagues. So the CSFL has two divisions in the CSFL, the North and the South Division. But in the CSFL with those two divisions, now there will be the MSFL, which is its own separate entity, its own separate grouping of schools in sprint football, you know, in the Midwest region of the United States. So this is going to be a year like no other. We've never had anything like this. Before this, all sprint football was just CSFL. So for the MSFL to, you know, come into existence just goes to show how this game has grown in interest, of course, which is probably the number one thing you need to spawn another league. It's just more opportunities for kids to play college football, which I, for one, am a fan of, big supporter of. The MSFL and its inaugural teams are Midway University, Bellarmine University, Quincy University, Fompon University, Camulet College of St. Joseph, and St. Mary of the Woods College. And before they've even played a game, no longer breaking news, it broke a couple days ago, maybe even a week or two ago, they will be adding another team next season. So in the 2023 season, they will be having another team join the MSFL, which is Oakland City University, which is in Oakland City, Indiana. So Oakland City is in Indiana. St. Mary of the Woods College is in Indiana. Camulet College of St. Joseph is in Indiana. Fompon University is in St. Louis, Missouri. Quincy University is in Illinois. Bellarmine University is in Louisville, Kentucky, and Midway University is in Midway, Kentucky. So really good combination of states, you know, up and down the little Midwest part of the U.S. So really, really excited for these teams to get going, get off the ground. Had a chance to speak to a lot of the assistant coaches, some of the head coaches for some of those teams. Obviously, they're very, very excited as well as I am. To be able to get football out there is going to be great. You know, it's not too many guys throughout the league's history have come from, you know, that part of the country. I'm sure throughout the years on the rosters, yeah, you have your handful of guys, of course, don't get me wrong, but now there'll be teams out there, so we're going to see a high concentration of guys from that part of the country. So I know they're going to be looking to put on for their states, their counties, their cities, you know, when before maybe they didn't have as much access to sprint football, or maybe not have heard of sprint football, or again, it was one or two loose recruits, you know, coming from that part of the country. Now there will be staple teams out there, so they can really hit the ground hard in recruiting those states and, you know, get more guys playing college football, which is ultimately the goal. You know, win games, chase glory, get an education, and win, you know, win football games. So really, really excited to see them get going off the ground. Like I said, talk to a lot of the coaches, spoken to some of the players. They're really excited. Going to try to get to a game out there, still figuring out how I'm going to get that done, with coaching my own, you know, team coaching in high school. So gotta, you know, play with the schedule a little bit. There allegedly is going to be a crossover game this year, at the end of the season, possibly. So if that is something that's going to be set in stone, I will most certainly make time for that. Hopefully it's probably somewhere neutral, which will still be closer to the East Coast. The closest stadium to any of those teams, which would still be, you know, super far away, would be Alderson Broaddus, which is in West Virginia. So they'd be the farthest west, you know, closest to Illinois and Kentucky, even though they're not close whatsoever. I get it. But if they did somewhere feasibly close between whatever two teams make it, it'd probably be there, or if it's just at a neutral site entirely, like football stadium, no affiliation to sprint football. So wherever it is, I'm going to try and get there. Obviously, I'm, you know, going to probably be going to the CSFL championship game like I did last year and a year before that. I was at Penn when it was at Penn, and it was Army Navy. I think that was 2019. Then the pandemic happened. And then last year it was up at Mansfield, which was great going up there. Always enjoyed going up there as a player. Was super cool going up there that time of year. Weather is brutal, but it was a damn good football game between Army and Navy last year. Got to see a lot of good football players, which I'm always excited for. Love seeing guys really excel and put it all on the line for their brothers and their team. And, you know, got to talk to a lot of the Mansfield coaches when I was up there and some of their players as well. So definitely had fun doing that last year. Looking forward to doing that again this year, wherever it is going to be. I got to look into that. Usually they announce it already. So if they did, I missed it. If they didn't, as soon as they announce it, I'll be making plans to drive wherever that is. Hopefully it'd be at Franklin Field. Call me a Philadelphia nut, but I just like playing at Franklin Field. I think it's a great place to have a championship game, play some football, legacy, yada, 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 all that good stuff. So we'll see where they're playing at, as well as the MSFL championship game, which will most likely be the same weekend, or maybe just a one-week buffer, because I believe the MSFL will be playing, because they only have the six teams. I know all of the teams are playing somebody twice. And I think it'll be all the same states, I think, are playing everybody twice. So I think Midway plays Bellarmine twice. I think Camulet plays St. Mary's twice. And I think Fontbonne and Quincy, just because there'll be the two out ones out, play each other twice. The schedules are out. I got to look at them, but I'm pretty sure Bellarmine and Midway play each other twice. I looked at that earlier today when I was checking out the schedule. So figure that out. Like I said, I'm going to try and get to one of those games during the regular season. If I absolutely cannot, just because of schedule conflicts, I will most certainly be trying to get to a crossover game should that game take place. Now, I know Bellarmine and Alderson Broaddus are going to have a crossover scrimmage, which is going to be great, great for the league. I can't wait for that to happen. Definitely going to be reaching out to guys and coaches after that to see how that went. That'll be the first crossover action. It'll be really good for Bellarmine because they'll get a chance to play a team that's been in it for a little bit. You know, Alderson Broaddus is still the newest team in the CSFL. But now this will be year, obviously COVID year, right? But this will be year four for them, I think. Year three or year four for them as a program. So, you know, now they're getting a little bit older guys. You know, those freshmen who were there in whatever year they came in, 2019, 2018, they'll be, you know, 21, 22 now, whatever the case may be. So a little bit more beef, a little bit more experience. They've been in it for a minute. especially at the quarterback position with Timothy Tillman. So this will be, you know, this won't be his first go around a captain in the helm for them. So really looking for big things out of them, looking for big improvements out of Alderson Broaddus. So I think it'll be good for both teams, you know, Alderson Broaddus to really get out there early, you know, get a scrimmage in the books, and Bellarmine to same thing, but, you know, really go out there and test yourself, see what you got. I remember coming in at Chestnut Hill and we had scrimmage Penn, essentially the same thing. Good chance for Penn to get out there early, you know, test the new team in the league. Good chance for us to just throw guys out there and see who could ball, see who could play, and, you know, figure it out as an inaugural team. So it's going to be an invaluable experience, maybe more for Bellarmine than Alderson Broaddus. But either way, it's going to be some great football out there that day. I'm really looking forward to see how that goes and talking to the guys after the fact. But super excited for the MSFL. Like I said, this will be the first time we have the two leagues. So really anxious to get that going. A lot of good recruits, you know, I'm seeing getting recruited by all of those teams. And it'll be a real good opportunity, you know, to have two leagues going on in the nation at the same time, something Sprint football has never seen. So as we go back to the CSFL, you know, East Coast Sprint football, this should be the most exciting season in league history. Now, I said that last year, and I was right. And then I said that like 2019, and at the time, 2019 was the most exciting season ever. But just the talent level of guys that we have nowadays is just absolutely phenomenal. It just creates a really good, entertaining game to watch. I'll say with extreme confidence, this is probably the best crop of quarterbacks that's ever been in the league at one time. It's usually been really, really top heavy. Maybe one, maybe two, maybe three dudes who were real dudes at a time. But when you look at the rosters this year with the quarterbacks, you have a Brennan Atwood for Navy who unfortunately got hurt, you know, early on into the season last year. But he was on pace to put up some really, really good numbers for Navy. Ultimately, still won it with a competent backup. But obviously riding Matthew McGee and Alex Tota, who were their workhorses in the running game. So, you know, the backup who took over kind of just had to not, like, mess up. Like, you just kind of got to, like, right the ship. You don't got to, you know, do too much type of deal. But nevertheless, having Atwood back will be a huge, huge boost. He's definitely the best quarterback they've had since Nick Dearding. You know, they've had a lot of guys take over the helm since then. But for the most part, just good athletes, you know, Braden Chimmel. I forget the other guy they had the one year. He came down from the Division I team, but he didn't do much at the quarterback position at all. And then they've had some backups, you know, play sparingly as well. But to have Atwood playing, he is a unmeasurable improvement, especially as a passer. And you can see that very, very early on, even though he ultimately only played the 3 or 4 games. Much better quarterback than they've had in years past. So very, very excited to see him come in and get back, you know, pick up where he left off. I believe he's going to be a junior as well. So full season this year, full season next year of him. Really excited to see that again. He's probably the most polished passer they've had in about 5 or 6 years. So I know the offensive coordinators there, the offensive coaches are really, really excited to continue to see him improve. And just it just allows them to do more in the passing game, like actually pass the ball and have someone with some pinpoint accuracy and not just like chucking up ducks. So really excited to see him play football. He's probably going to be one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch this year. Then you have Kasid Rabin for Mansfield, who really, really came onto the scene strong last year. One of the most dynamic athletes in the league last year and is already one of the most dynamic quarterbacks the CSFL has ever seen. In his first year, he ran for the most yards any quarterback has ever ran for in the season. So that just lets you know the type of talent that he's bringing right there. Couple yards, like 70, 80 yards away from having 1,000 and 1,000 season, which is absolutely ridiculous. Nobody's even come close to doing that at the quarterback position. So, you know, if he continues to improve, I'm sure one of his next 3 to 4 years, he'd be able to eclipse that marker. So really excited to see what he can do, how he can improve coming off of, again, which was only his freshman year. You know, kind of fell off a little bit towards the end of the year. Team started to try and do some different things to contain that Mansfield offense. But I have no doubt in my mind they'll be even better this year, and he will be even better as an individual player. Got a chance to talk to him a little bit last year. Philadelphia guy, so I know he's got grit. I know he works hard, so really excited to see him play. For Caldwell, Frank DeMio, who quarterbacked them to their best season ever. One of the best seasons a Caldwell quarterback's ever had since their inception. You know, 1,000-yard guy, 7-8-ish touchdowns, a couple rushing touchdowns in there too. And they, again, quarterbacked them to their best record in their team's history. So really excited to see what he can do in the senior year. You got Penn with Andrew Piolini. If I butcher anybody's names, if you see me in person, one, please correct me. Let me know how to say it right. But giving it my best shot. But I talked to Andrew as well last year a couple of times with a couple of Penn games. He's very, very good. He continues a strong tradition at the quarterback position at Penn. Guys like Todd Bolser, guys like Mike McCurdy, guys like Eddie Jenkins. I myself definitely did have questions about whether that tradition would continue. But Andrew wiped those concerns right off the table. He's right there in the same punching bracket as those guys, and he's going to be in MVP talks next year. So especially with losing a lot of the talent that Penn is losing, and with, you know, them replenishing, but it's going to be young guys, it's going to be sophomores, it's going to be freshmen at some of those key positions, tight end, lead receiver, running back, things like that. Definitely expect him, you know, to shoulder a lot of that load and really look to him to make plays, not so much vice versa, counting on the receiver to make the play. You know, really going to be counting on him to be accurate and take a leadership role in that offense. So just those four guys. I mentioned another guy earlier, AB, Timothy Tillman. Maybe while the team has not experienced a lot of success lately, he's definitely a guy you can see measured improvement from year after year after year. So him going into another year starting, being a starting quarterback for them, I expect him to take another big jump and really look to lead them to what could possibly be their best season ever. You know, the timing's right with the newer teams. You go to Chestnut Hill, you go to Stack, you go to Caldwell. That third year, that fourth year, that fifth year is when they really pop. Like, that's when the boom comes. That's when the jump from 2 wins to 5 wins or 1 win to 4 wins traditionally happens. So, you know, they're going to be scary. You know what I'm saying? They're definitely the timeline is in their favor. All the other teams I just mentioned, those were the years that they popped. So really looking to see what he can do and how he can lead that team. And then a Dennis Rordan for St. Thomas Aquinas last year led the league in passing as a freshman. So, again, strong receivers there, Blankney, Matthews. But, again, he definitely looked like a real quarterback. That was not a quarterback who was carried by great receivers. It was very symbiotic with that relationship. Obviously, Mekhi Matthews is one of the best wide receivers in the league. Going to go down as the best wide receiver in Stack history, that's for sure. But Dennis Rordan definitely looks the part, definitely made some big-time throws, made some big-boy throws, and played good in big games. So what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 quarterbacks that are the truth, like real quarterbacks. So, you know, all league teams this year are going to be hard to fucking make. You know, you're really going to have to nitpick with some of these guys. A lot of the completion percentages are in the same bracket. A lot of the yards are in the same bracket. A lot of the touchdowns are in the same bracket. So really anxious to see all those quarterbacks get on the field. It's just easier to win games when you have a good quarterback. And all of those quarterbacks, as for mentioned quarterbacks, you would win games because of them, not despite of them, which is a big, big difference in my mind. You can win a game despite poor quarterback play, or you could win a game because of good quarterback play. And every one of those guys I just named is going to be the catalyst for their football team. So really, really anxious to see all these guys get back on the field. Obviously, great talent at other positions, too. Really excited to see Alex Tota be the lead back for Navy. He's been a guy who's been doing things since his freshman year when he was on ESPN, just trashing what was a poor Cornell team that year. Really excited to see him get first lead back type of carries. He's always really kind of been behind somebody else, but now he's undoubtedly the bell cow. So really excited to see him get out there. Again, I mentioned the guy, Mekhi Matthews for St. Thomas Aquinas. You know, he's 1A or 1B, best wide receiver in the league. And despite his smaller size, he's a very, very great route runner, very physical guy, extremely fast, extremely quick. So one of my favorite players to watch, that's for sure. Navy has another guy, should be going into his junior year, I believe, Andrew Margiotta. Another guy like Atwood, who is a stud at a position they have not traditionally had studs at. definitely enjoyed watching him play. I think he had 2 100-yard games last year. And then he ended up getting hurt as well. I think he got hurt in the last game of the regular season, which was Penn for them, and then ultimately did not play the championship game. So just a testament to, you know, how strong that Navy team was last year. They lost their starting quarterback, who's a stud, and their best receiver, who was a stud, and they still managed to win a tough, tough championship game. So really excited to see Andrew get back on the field as well as Brandon. But in terms of Andrew, again, they have not traditionally, Navy has not traditionally had great receivers. The best receiver, well, their best receiver all time is Matthew Hite, a guy, I think he graduated in 2015. Definitely going to be a Hall of Famer one day, a CFL Hub Hall of Famer. But he's, since him, you know, it's kind of just been a guy by committee type situation, like nobody who's like a first team dude, like for real, like just, you know, when you win games, you get guys on teams, but they haven't had anybody who's like a legit route runner, a legit one-on-one 50-50 ball type of guy, a guy who's fast, a guy who's strong, like a traditional, legit, like number one guy at the X. And Andrew definitely is that. So I'm excited to see him play. He was one of my favorite guys to watch play last year. So that pairing will be definitely a pairing to watch for Navy. So, again, a couple strong running backs, a couple strong receivers. You know, you go to the defensive side of the ball, really excited to see Brendan Windsor for Army get back out there, one of the interior defensive linemen. He definitely, much like Penn and, you know, Navy with the running backs, he continues a strong, strong legacy at the position. With Army, it's just the front four. Like, yeah, they have great defense ends, great defensive tackles, but just strong defensive linemen in general. He continues that strong tradition. He was definitely fun to watch. He caused a lot of havoc. He lived in the backfield. And, you know, with the defensive line guys, you know, playing in the front seven myself, I know how important it is just to cause chaos, cause havoc. And great players are going to get their stats. You know, he had really good stats last year. I think he had like 30 awesome tackles, definitely 10-plus tackles for loss, a few sacks. But it's almost the plays that don't get recorded in the stat book sometimes are as impactful in any given game. And he absolutely just lived in the backfield. It was crazy to watch. And really got to play second fiddle to Alex Sebeski, who started on the edge. But he's going to be the best defensive lineman on that team. He's going to be one of the best defensive linemen in the league this upcoming season. So really excited to see him get back out there. A guy I forgot for Army as well. Go back to wide receivers, Donovan Mannion. He was one of the best wide receivers in the league last year. I think he led the league in touchdowns. I think he had 8 or 9 receiving touchdowns. And coming out of the slot, was a mismatch nightmare. Definitely did not have a lot of safeties who could keep up with him. I'll say this, the best matchup that I saw, like that was just one-on-one, me versus you, was Adam Weisenfels for Navy. He was a safety corner, ended up winning the defensive player of the year last year and the league's MVP last year versus Donovan Mannion in that championship game. The other games that they played during the year, it was matchups, but that championship game really showed why it's important. Like, you gotta have dudes. Like, you can scheme what you want to scheme, and, you know, as a coach myself now, I know sometimes coaches get into like this pissing contest of like, oh, my scheme versus yours, I can scheme anybody open. You know, scheme is great, but, you know, you gotta have Jimmys and Joes. It's Jimmys and Joes, not X's and O's. And obviously coaching plays a important part in winning football games, but you gotta have dudes. And to watch Donovan Mannion work against Adam Weisenfels, who was one of the best players that I played against, even though I was playing defense as well, but like got to see him play defense against teams and got to watch a lot of film on him. I think he was a freshman when I was a senior or freshman when I was a junior, however it worked out. To see him go up against Donovan Mannion was like, wow, like this kid can really ball. Like, I think Weisenfels got the better of him a little bit in the game, definitely contributed to them winning that game, of course. But just to watch Mannion go out there and ball week after week after week. I think he had 2 games last year where he had 3 touchdowns. That's where the bulk of his touchdowns came from, the 6 out of the 9. Just a monster coming out of the slot. It'll be interesting to see if they move him to the outside to be that consistent outside threat. They had a Craig Hamilton who was out there last year who's gone. Even though Mannion was their best receiver. But you could kind of like live with him in the slot because, all right, we do have someone who's a threat. He might not be consistent. You know, he might not consistently get open, might not be like an all-league guy, but like he is a deep threat. so we can kind of hide Mannion in the slot. So it'll be interesting to see where they put him, if he'll continue to move around, if he'll stay in the slot, or if, since he's their best receiver, we got to move him outside. So that'll be interesting to see. But Mannion is, again, Mannion, Matthews, and Margiotta are a crazy group of three receivers. Like, that are, like, all studs. So really anxious to see them all play. But then, like you're saying, go back to the defense. Brendan Windsor, really excited to see him play. Really appreciate his game as a former front seven player. Devin Martin for Navy is another guy I'm looking forward to see play. St. Thomas Aquinas, Malik Lucas is another guy I'm looking to see play. You know, he got to play opposite end away from Tyreek Smith, who won our CSFL Hub Don Award, which is the award we give out to the best defensive player. And, you know, now he'll be undoubtedly the best defensive player for St. Thomas Aquinas, in the front seven at least. And, you know, strong guy, really, really athletic, plays with a lot of fire. Want to see what he can do, how he can improve now that, you know, offensive line will most likely be shifting towards him. You know, it's one thing to eat when you got somebody else to take off the pressure, but when all the pressure is leaning at you, then you really see what you're made of when you're in the front seven, when you're in the front four. So really excited to see him play. Always have a good time when I'm watching stat games, watching him play. And, you know, a few other upfront guys, but then you really get to the linebackers, where probably the second strongest group across the league next to the quarterbacks. Even though linebackers traditionally, you know, have been strong groups in the CSFL. But you got guys like Andrew Coughlin for Caldwell. You got guys like Orion Jakeman for Chestnut Hill, who's a defensive back, linebacker, hybrid type in the defense that they play. But he's a strong, strong guy. He was a freshman when I was a senior, and he's been phenomenal every year that he's been in the league. So really excited to see him get back after, which was an injury plagued season last season for him as an individual. So I know he's anxious to get back out there, get going. Navy has a linebacker, Paul Cooler. Again, sorry if I'm butchering names. Please correct me. Reach out, correct me, person, Twitter, whatever you got to do. He led Navy in tackles last year over Mike Garrett, Garnett, Mike, over their Mike Backer last year. Which is a big deal because he was a stud. His totals in tackles and tackles for loss did not really tell the full story of what he meant to that Navy defense. So for Paul to have more tackles than him, that's a real big deal. You know, he's looking to carry on a strong tradition at backer there for them. Mansfield's Matt Robert, who's been a stud since he got to Mansfield. He's guaranteed 60-plus tackles a season, like every year. Just pencil it in. Could be 65, could be 68, could be 71 or 72, but guaranteed 65 tackles like a season, like it's nothing. So he's just a machine. Going to go down as one of their best defensive players ever. Probably going to finish somewhere in the tops, you know, 7, 8, 9 in tackles in league history, and probably will finish as their second all-time leading tackler. It's going to be really, really hard for him to catch Jake Myers. I think Matt's going into his senior year. So he'd have to transcend the position to get like 80-odd some tackles or something like that. But, you know, he's a phenomenal backer. So not saying he can't do it, but he's going to finish one or two as Mansfield's all-time leading tackler. And he's going to finish 10, 9, 8, or 7 CSFL all-time leading tackler. So really excited to see him get back out there, continue a strong tradition of play that he's shown at the position. Penn has Lewis Evans, who another dude's been a stud since he got there. He was another guy who went for maybe a second fiddle when he was playing next to Aaron Johnson. So now it's his defense. He managed the middle. Now he has a younger guy next to him as well, so that he can mentor and give him a lot of tutelage so he can carry on the tradition as well. But Evans is as good of a backer as you're going to see. Even in that unorthodox Penn defense with the three front, he's blitzing, he's covering, he's coming off the edge, blitzing up the middle. He's as good of a backer as they've had at that position and has been in the league, you know, probably in the last 5, 6, 7 years. So always enjoy watching him play. He's another guy who plays with a lot of fire, plays with a lot of juice. And Army, Luke Gigliotti. Not sure if he's related to the other Gigliotti who played running back there. Could be, could not be, I'm not sure. But Luke was really, really good last season when he didn't have to be the best guy. So this is another guy who's, all right, now you're probably the best linebacker. So really excited to see what that new responsibility means for him. You know, one of the things I always tell my kids that I coach, to whom much is given, much is expected. So, you know, I'm always having high expectations for guys, and obviously I'm sure the coaches and teammates do as well. But he's a guy I think can just absolutely dominate at the linebacker position for Army this season. So excited to see what he can bring to the table. You know, defensive backs this year is really going to be a young group across the league. Across the league is going to be a lot of young defensive backs. The all-league teams for the league reflected that. The all-league teams for us, the CSFL Hub, reflected that. Lots of sophomores, lots of freshmen on first, second, and third team. Guy like Kyle Reedus for Caldwell, very, very low completion percentage when targeting him. I think he had a sub-35 completion percentage when targeted, at least the games that we watched. That's one of the things that I definitely keep a close eye on when I'm evaluating defensive backs, specifically corner safeties, obviously a little bit different. But when you're evaluating a corner, like, I remember there was a year a guy, like, led the league in picks. But he, like, you, teams were completing, like, 66% of their passes, like, when they targeted him. So it's kind of like, all right, but, like, you know, I'll always favor the guy who teams have a hard time completing passes on him than, you know, the pick guy. Now, like, it's weighted, you know, there's context involved, but, you know, I think Reedus had maybe like one or two picks, handful of PBUs, but you were hard pressed to find a lot of receivers that that could really go out there and bump with him. And really, quarterbacks had a hard time completing passes when targeting him. Same thing for Sean Bernard for St. Thomas Aquinas. I believe he's going to be a sophomore as well. He had a sub-35 completion percentage when targeted, you know, the four or five games that I watched to him. And it's like, you know, to have that low of a completion percentage when targeted at that young of an age really shows me, like, all right, this dude's going to be a stud. Like, again, if they never touch 10 interceptions, that's fine. But if they're locking dudes down year in, year out, year in, year out, and then they get to the point where they're not even targeted, that lets you know, like, all right, that's a damn good cornerback. So that's always one thing that I personally value more. You know, when we're evaluating things, you know, right, doing write-ups, and at the end of the year when we're doing our all-league teams, corners, if they're getting, like, four out of every five passes thrown at them completed, that's like, all right, man, like, come on. So these young guys in the league right now, man, they might not be generating the most picks ever, like, in league history. I think James Campbell is the all-time leader in picks, or Zamar Stone, both of them are Navy guys. I think they have like 12 or 13 picks, whatever the exact number is. Not a lot of guys in elite history with 10 picks. Just, you know, the nature of the game, how fast it is, you know, lots of short passing game and as extensions of the running game. So even throughout the league's history, you know, obviously the quarterbacks are better now than they maybe have been in the past, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So that's also a part of it. You just get guys who are better throwers of the football, more accurate. But these defensive backs now, these young dudes, man, they are, like, nice. Even though you're not seeing, you know, 7 picks a year, 8 picks a year, 9 picks a year, you really only get, like, one dude a year getting, like, 7 picks, 8 picks. So that's just something I've noticed. But like I said, these young dudes like Kyle Reedus, Sean Bernard are testaments to the fact, like, you don't have to have a bunch of picks to get recognized as being an elite corner, at least with us. I know the league favors statistics a little bit more. But trust me, any of the young guys listening at our corners, if you're locking shit up, best believe you are not, it's not going unseen by people out here observing the games, watching the games, absorbing the content. So those are just a few of the guys I threw out, you know, that I'm excited to see play moving forward for the rest of the summer as we creep up to camp, as we creep up to the starts of the seasons, first scrimmages, first games. Going to be releasing some articles, things like, you know, games I'm excited to watch, top players at certain positions, you know, like top 5 quarterbacks heading into the season, top 5 running backs. I always do a potential like boom guys, like breakout seasons is what I usually call it, like 5-6 guys who are geared up for a breakout season. Maybe even like a comeback season type of situation. There are quite a few guys who got injured last year who should be looking to have strong seasons bouncing back, like a Terrence Quaker for Mansfield. Mentioned a Ryan Jakeman for Chestnut Hill. Brendan Atwood, I mentioned at the start at the top of the podcast for Navy, only playing 3-4 games. So there's quite a few guys who, you know, maybe the season didn't go their way last year. But, you know, your off-season training, getting healthy, rehabbing, getting their mental health right, whatever the situation might be, who should be geared up for some really big seasons. So I might do, like, you know, guys looking to have some bounce back type of years type of things. Also have our annual CSFL Hub Hall of Fame induction. So this year we will be inducting 7 new athletes to the CSFL Hub Hall of Fame. 3 offensive players, 4 defensive players. So you'll be looking at 1 quarterback, 2 running backs, 1 defensive lineman, 1 linebacker, and 2 defensive backs, if I remember correctly. I don't have the exact list that we compiled right in front of me. But 7 guys will be going in this year, 7 well-deserved guys that just, you know, just goes to show that the league has been great. There's always been great players in this league. And, you know, just excited to these guys, you know, to get their flowers while they're still here. So, yeah, more articles coming up this summer. The Hall of Fame induction, which is usually the week before the first games kick off. So the week before week 1, last week of August, first week of September, whatever the case may be. Top of that, as well, I'll be reaching out. I tweeted this out the other day. I'll be reaching out to players and coaches to see gauge interest if they would like to do some interviews. I know going into last year, I think I just had a discussion with one of my writers on the Hub, Cole Jacobson. Didn't do the interviews last year. It was coming off of a weird year, you know, coming off of the COVID year. A lot of guys graduated. A lot of guys didn't, you know, go back to school for unfortunate reasons because that pandemic kind of messed everybody up. So definitely be reaching out to guys, players, coaches who may be interested, you know, hopping on 30 minutes, just talking ball, talking, you know, how you're feeling, upcoming season, things like that. Or feel free to reach out to me. Let me know that you would like to do that. Really going to stick to 1 guy per team type of deal. So if it's like a coach, it'll be the coach for that team. If it's a player, it'll be a player for that team. Like, I wouldn't do a coach and a player unless it was together. If it was together, I could probably swing that. But, you know, want to try and spread the love. I've never gotten to, like, all the teams just because, you know, it's like just me. You know, obviously I have a schedule as well as you guys. So I'd have to do, like, somebody every day to get to, what, 9 CSFL teams. 6 MSFL teams. So that's a lot. So I'll reach out to a couple teams, couple players. Kind of a first come, first serve situation. I already have 1 guy guaranteed, and I had spoke to some coaches previously who expressed some interest. So I'll reach out to them first and, you know, just say, hey, you know, remember you had said you wanted to hop on, would you like to hop on? Yada yada yada. You know how it go. So that's what's coming up for the Hub in the upcoming weeks. Like I said, this is the kickoff podcast for the 2022 season. It's going to be a barn burner. It's going to be great. Another thing I'm looking forward to in the MSFL is that they're all inaugural teams and somebody has to be the champion. With all of the newer teams in the CSFL, from Chestnut Hill to Caldwell to St. Thomas Aquinas to Outer Sabrotas, they're already established teams that they're trying to catch up to. And now it's, you know, a nice mix of talent. You know, just last year, Caldwell and Army, they played a 3 overtime game, a 4 overtime game in the pouring rain. Mansfield, St. Thomas Aquinas played like a 3 overtime, 4 overtime game. So the competitive balance is now here in the CSFL. It just took years, you know, for teams to get acclimated. But with the MSFL, everybody's brand new. And even next year when Oakland City comes in, everybody will be year 2 when they're year 1. So everybody's still brand new. Everybody's super young. It's still going to be a team of sophomores and freshmen for the most part. Give or take, you know, a couple of transfers, a couple of older guys you can manage to find who still want to play some ball. So that'll be interesting, that dynamic and the relationships that the two teams develop. Obviously, I think the in-state teams will probably emerge as each other's biggest rival. Obviously, in the CSFL, there are some other factors that dictate the rival. Like, obviously, there's the Army-Navy rivalry. Obviously, there's the Ivy League rivalry between Cornell and Penn. But a lot of the geographical rivalries have become a lot of the bigger draws in the bigger games. Like, St. Thomas Aquinas and Cornell have always had really good back-and-forth games, you know, since St. Thomas Aquinas has gotten good enough to compete. And I think they've won the last 2 or 3 meetings, like, handedly. So, you know, both being in that area in New York. Penn and Chestnut Hill have had really, really good games since Chestnut Hill's inception. Obviously, both in Philadelphia. So Chestnut Hill and Caldwell, Jersey just being, you know, not too far away. Both being D2 teams, I've had really, really good games in the past. So the geographical rivalries are always, always great to watch too. Kind of like state bragging rights type of deal. And I'm sure that will also emerge in the MSFL with, you know, there'll be, once Oakland City comes, there'll be three teams in Indiana and then the two teams in Kentucky. You got to win that for bragging rights, right? And that's going to help recruiting. You know what I'm saying? So really interested to see which organic rivalries, you know, blossom and bloom. And I think it'll be the geographical ones. But obviously, you know, you get those teams, two of these teams might play. You know what? I just don't like that color of that jersey. I don't care if they're from Illinois or Kentucky or Indiana. Me and you got a problem. So it'll be nice to see, you know, rivalries come about and just a natural development of the league, the players and the coaches. So that's about it. This was more of just a general interest update podcast, just to get the season rolling, just to put something out there. Like I said, there'll be written content coming, video content with the CSFL Hub Hall of Fame class. You know, I incorporate a lot of videos and articles as well. So expect a lot of that. Again, going to be reaching out to some guys, gauging interest with the interviews, seeing what's up with that. And I'll be making my way around the games this year. I've already looked at a lot of the schedules. Definitely be at some Chestnut Hill games, of course, and some Penn games. You know, still residing in Philadelphia myself. So those are definitely the two teams I see the most. And then I try and split it up so I can see, you know, other teams coming in. So I think I saw two Chestnut Hill games last year. And that was Alderson Brodus and then Mansfield. So I got to see, you know, Alderson Brodus and Mansfield play against Chestnut Hill. Then I think I went to two Penn games and I got to see Penn obviously twice. And then I think I saw them play Caldwell and Navy. So I got to see them play. Then I drove to the Navy Army game, which was the championship. So I got to see Army play as well. So saw about half of the CSFL teams play last year in person. So gonna do it like that again. You know, I really gotta get to Caldwell. I really gotta get to a home game for Caldwell, New Jersey's great atmosphere. I remember how great the atmosphere was there when I was a player. I see how great it is on film and on tape. So, Jersey guys, I'm trying to get out there. Bear with me, you know. I really want to get there. I'd love to get to a Stag home game as well. I'd love to go down to Navy again. Haven't been to Indianapolis since I was a player. Championship games there, great excuse for me to go down there. So, going to split it up. But again, you know, I really see the Philly teams the most, Penn and Chestnut Hill, just because of proximity. But I'm, you know, trying to make sure I go see two different teams for like their two or three home games that I go to. So on that note, thank you again. Like I started the podcast off with, just thank you to everybody who's been a constant supporter. Much love, much appreciation to you. And thank you for the continued support. We're going to make this season the best season yet. Should be one of the most exciting seasons to date. I'd argue it's going to be the most exciting season to date because of some of the examples I've given already. So again, I'm your host, as always, Kyle. Thanks for rocking with me. See you guys in a little bit. Peace.